Welcome to the Essential Church Podcast. Our goal is to strengthen and equip church and ministry leaders just like you through practical and theological discussions about some of the most pressing and important issues facing the local church today. We feature conversations with members of our team here at New Life Church in Colorado Springs, Colorado, as well as interviews with authors and thinkers from around the world. You can follow the essential.church on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Watch episodes on our YouTube channel and also subscribe to our podcast via iTunes and Spotify, where you'll find a full archive of previous conversations. And now, here is this week's episode of the Essential Church Podcast.
Well, welcome to this episode of the Essential Church Podcast, an ongoing conversation about some of the most important issues facing the local church today. I'm your host, Andrew Arndt. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving week last week. We come back from Thanksgiving this week to talk with our senior pastor, Brady Boyd, about his newest book, Extravagant, Discovering a Life of Dangerous Generosity. It's a great conversation with Daniel Grothy, Glenn Packiam, Brad Baker, Pastor Brady, and myself. Brady, I've had the privilege of serving with for the last 3.5 years. He's one of the most generous men and servants of Jesus that I know. So he embodies this message so well. It's a great conversation about the parable of the Good Samaritan and the way that we really come to embody that in our lives and the difference that it makes in our churches and our families, really in the world. And so I think you're going to really enjoy this conversation. And without further word from me, here's Extravagant. Welcome to this episode of the Essential Church Podcast, our ongoing conversation about some of the most important issues facing the local church today. I'm your host, Andrew Arndt, with Daniel Grothy, Glenn Packiam. Brad Baker joining us today. Hey, what's up, Pastor
morning,
Brad?
Guys.
Good to have you.
It's great to be here.
And our fearless leader and senior pastor, Brady Boyd. We are here discussing his book that is releasing today, Extravagant, Discovering a Life of Dangerous Generosity. Pastor Brady, tell us why you wrote this book. Why is this the next book for you to write? It's your seventh book.
My seventh book.
So it's a very biblical number. And so rounding out, you know, the package of Brady books, here we have Extravagance. So talk to us about this book.
And it's got a nice shiny cover.
I love it, man. It's beautiful.
Well, you know, all my life I've been around people who were extravagantly generous, and I've just been paying attention to their lives for many, many years. And I felt like it was time to take those collective thoughts, those observations that I've had over the years, and to put it in a book. And so about a year ago, I was reading through the scriptures. I was in Luke chapter 10, reading through the parable of the Good Samaritan. And I was just so struck by the story that Jesus tells in Luke 10, that the Good Samaritan goes to extravagant lengths to take care of someone that was so different than him. This is not what's so beautiful about the Good Samaritan is not one person taking care of someone like him. It was a Samaritan going into the ditch, taking care of someone who was opposed to him, who really hated him.
Yeah.
And so I was just struck by the story, and I thought that if there was ever a time in our nation's history, in our church's history, in my own personal history, where I needed to be reminded of extravagant generosity, I think now is the time. Our country, our nation as a whole is really wrecked right now. I think it's unsettled. And I think one of the keys to bringing healing to our country is getting back to generosity. Mm. I think generosity has the capacity and the ability to bring healing to a nation that's very divided right now. And that's why I wrote the book. And the word extravagant, I know people have already asked me, why'd you use the word extravagant? It seems like that when we think of that word, we think of excess.
We think of too much.
It's a negative connotation. But actually, the Bible is an extravagant story of grace.
Yes.
It's an extravagant story of God going to extravagant measures to win back the hearts of humanity that have been wrecked by sin. So I think the word actually applies to the spirit of generosity.
What are some of the extravagant moments of generosity that you remember that marked your memory, that it got you maybe from childhood or from adulthood, watching these moments of, wow, someone just did that? Take us to one of those stories.
Yeah, so I've never really told a story because it's, but my mom and dad, my mom and dad were very hard workers. They always worked hard, they always provided, but we were always suffering financially growing up. I never felt like we ever had very much money in the house. But one thing my mom and dad did on 4 or 5 different occasions is we took young men into our homes. Mm-hmm. I can think of 4 young men that came and lived in my house with me for months, in one case, over a year. And my mom and dad would find these young men who were struggling. They had been kicked out of their home, or they were troubled, or there was various reasons why they were basically homeless. And my mom and dad said, come live with us. Now, they had 3 children of their own. I'm one of 3 children. But I can remember, you know, D.L., I remember him, a young man named D.L. Daniels. He ended up living at our house for over a year and became like one of my brothers. Mm-hmm. And his life was a wreck. His family was a wreck. But my mom and dad, in spite of their own, you know, poverty, really, took these young men in, fed them, clothed them, helped them get through school. Four different times they took in people off the streets. And I just was so marked by that as a young man that my mom and dad would go to the extravagant measures to show generosity. And so when Pam and I got married, we had a young man in our family, on Pam's side of the family, that found himself really out on the streets. And Pam and I, we were like 22, 23 years old, a young married couple. We had nothing.
Living on ramen.
We were totally, we were poor and broke. We took him into our house. He lived with us for a year. And he was about 17 at the time. I think I was 23. He was about my age almost. But he came and lived with us for a year when we were a young married couple. And so I did that because of the way my parents had modeled that generosity. And it's those stories of generosity that have marked me over the years. And I think it's just, it's the heart of Jesus to show generosity. And I think we've lost it. I think for in the American church culture, we've lost this idea of hospitality, of welcoming strangers to our tables. Yeah. We're quick to welcome people who agree with us, but we're very reticent about bringing people around us who are different, who are broken, who are hurt, who are needy, who are messy.
American culture. So the stats show that the more someone makes in America, the more prosperity that they have, the less they give.
Yes.
Talk to us about that. Why do you think that is right now?
It is true that the amount goes up, but the percentage goes down. And I think we start getting guarded. You know, I'm 54. I'm about to turn 54 years old. And I know I'm in a stage in my life where I'm thinking about retirement. I'm thinking about empty nest. I'm thinking about different things than I was thinking about in my 30s. So in my 20s and 30s, it seemed like I had permission to be more maybe reckless or dangerous. Adventurous in my spending.
Less at stake, maybe.
Yeah, there's a lot less to lose in your 20s and 30s. Yeah. You have more time to recover from mistakes. Sure. But now I'm cautious, but at 50, in my mid-50s, I don't have 20 years of earning your power left. And I think that's what people get cautious. I think they start hedging their bets a bit. I think people start guarding their possessions. The more, you know, when the zeros get, when you have to write more zeros on the check, it's a big deal. And there's more to lose, quite honestly. And so I think people get cautious. But actually, I think in your 50s, for the people who are watching, they're in their 50s and 60s, the Lord has actually provided for us so that we can be a blessing.
Yes, right.
And this is the moment where we actually can be more generous, and we have the ability to be more generous. And I know for me, Pam and I have made up our minds a long time ago that we were always going to live below our means, and we were always going to give our first and our best to the local church, and then we were always going to have money left over after that to give in addition. And we've done that now for about 25 years of our married life. I would say the first 5 or 6 years of our married life, we were trying to figure a lot of things out. We didn't really know how to handle our money. But thankfully, I had pastors who were not afraid to talk about money out of the pulpit in a really godly, biblical way. I know there's a lot of unhealthy teachings about finances out there. Yeah. But for me, I was grateful that I had sensible pastors who gave me common sense, biblical knowledge about giving. And so for the last 25 years, we've lived this life of generosity. And there are stories that I could tell about what Pam and I do with our money, but I'm hesitant about that because the Bible says to not let your left hand, your right hand know what your left hand's doing. But Pam and I, one of the most fun things that we get to do right now in our life, and I say this with absolute sincerity, the most fun thing I get to do right now is give. It is a joy. It is. I've caught it. I've got it. It's a joyful experience to take what the Lord has provided me and then to give that away to widows. Pam and I just recently, without going into details, Pam and I really got to bless a widow recently, someone who's lost her husband. She lives alone. And we found out about a need that she had, and we were able to meet the need. And without going into details, it was such a joy. It was my heart came alive. That money that God had brought into my hands, the first step in this whole process is realizing that God is the provider. God is the source. And so I don't see it as my own.
Yeah.
I see it as stewarding it.
Not ownership, stewardship.
I don't own it. Yeah. I steward it.
One of the things I've heard you say for so many years here at New Life, Brady, is that from the Proverbs, the borrower is slave to the lender, and you can't be a servant to the needy if you're a slave to the borrower.
Mm.
And so the flip side, maybe the prelude to generosity, is good stewardship of the resources that you've been entrusted in. Mm. There's something in the parable, in the Good Samaritan story, about how the guy had the money to give.
Yes.
Yeah, one of my favorite chapters in the book is the beauty of a boring budget.
Yeah,
see, a lot of people, when they hear the word budget, they see it as restrictive. But actually, a budget is actually gives you a blueprint that you can spend. It allows you to spend. It shows you how to spend. It's permission to spend, not restrictions on spending.
Yeah.
And so one of the key things is making sure that you have a plan for your spending. It's called a budget, right? And I know that sounds awful. People will immediately. I think it's probably the most important chapter in the book, though, because most people have not been taught well how to spend less than you make. And one of the great stories you brought up in the Good Samaritan is the fact that he had money available.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now
right.
Think about this. This Samaritan is going about his normal day. He was on his way to somewhere. He looks in the ditch. There's a guy who's a Jewish man who would have considered the Samaritan half human, a dog, less than human. So he stops what he's doing. He was willing to be interrupted. And he goes into the ditch, and he's inconvenienced. So he not only does he take personal responsibility for the guy, he bandages his wounds, puts him on his own donkey, takes him to the local Hilton, the garden man down the street.
For sure.
And tells
him, rewards.
And one of the most powerful things in this story that Jesus tells is that the good Samaritan says to the innkeeper, take good care of him.
Yeah.
Here's some money to take care of him. I will come back tomorrow and give you whatever else you need.
Put it on my tab.
Yeah. Put it on my tab, right? Yeah. That's actually that part of the story is why I call the book extravagant.
Right.
That is extravagant.
Yes.
Mm.
Here's a total stranger. This would be like someone with a red MAGA hat in the ditch being beat up by Antifa rioters, and then someone with a Biden-Harris t-shirt goes into the ditch to rescue him.
Yep.
Yeah.
If Jesus had told the parable in the 21st century,
that's
what
how we would have told it. Right.
Sure. Yeah.
So one of the key things about this parable is how racial and cultural boundaries he stepped across huge boundaries, some huge crevices to meet this guy in his need. And
which shows that generosity, yes, it's about money, but it's about much more than money.
Mm-hmm.
It's about his time. It's about his generosity of love and mercy.
Yeah, one of the things that I talk about in the book is the idea of compassion. And
yes,
a lot of people think that compassion is this external thing that happens when you see, you see a puppy on TV or you see someone in need. You know, this
emotional,
external thing.
Yeah.
But actually, compassion starts inside of us long before you see the need.
Mm-hmm.
So something had happened in this Good Samaritan's heart long before he found the guy in the ditch. And this is what I want to tackle in the book. And this is what I want people to pay attention to in your own life. If you don't have internal compassion now, you won't give compassion when you see the need.
Mm-hmm.
So compassion is actually a daily working out of your heart. It is cultivating a sense of do I have empathy? Do I have concern? One of the things we teach our church here is to pray this morning prayer. Like I prayed it this morning when I woke up, come Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reason I pray come Holy Spirit is not because I think the Holy Spirit's run off and left me in the middle of the night and I have to call him back. It's to remind me that today I'm going to get up and I'm going to get involved in the kingdom of heaven today.
Mm-hmm.
Today I have an assignment. I don't know all the details of that assignment.
Right.
I am willing today, and we're recording this on a Monday, and I know that today I'm going to have the ability, and I might have the opportunity to be compassionate. But if I haven't made up my mind right now to be compassionate, then I can make up excuses when I do see needs. So we can overlook the needs of people. And so this is a tender heart that I want to keep cultivating in my life, especially as I get into my 60s and 70s. I want to be the kind old man. Well, kind old men don't happen accidentally.
Not accident. That's right. It's not an accident.
Kind old men
are happening.
Made up their mind in their middle ages
that
their hearts were going to stay tender.
Yeah.
And cynics are mostly concerned about their self-interest.
Mm.
compassionate people have made up their mind to be interested in others. Mm-hmm. And this is really the reason I wrote the book, is to make sure, I think it was just, you know, if no one else reads it but me, I need to read this book. Mm-hmm. I need to make sure that my heart stays sincere and tender and teachable along the way. And I still have so much to learn. And I want to be a learner, and I want to keep my eyes open. So one of the things I talk about is, are you willing to be interrupted?
Mm-hmm.
Are you willing to be inconvenienced?
Because
we can make excuses. We can drive by the person in the ditch all day long and have very good reasons for not helping. But are you willing to be interrupted? And are you willing to be inconvenienced?
Mm-hmm. Makes me think of the subtitle there, the dangerous part of it, right? Because it's going to cost you something. Yeah.
That's exactly the reason why I used that subtitle, Living a Life of Dangerous Generosity. I think most of us are playing it safe, Brad. I think if we were to be honest about our Christian experience in America, most of us live in suburban bubbles. Mm-hmm. We have created safety nets around everything. If we were all honest, we're probably helicopter parents. We don't take risk the way I think the scriptures ask us to take risk. Mm-hmm. And think about the Samaritan. He had to go back home and tell his wife and family how he had spent his coin.
Yeah, right. Guess what?
Where's that money you had? There was a Jewish guy in the ditch. You helped a Jewish guy.
You did what?
Jewish people wanting to walk through our neighborhood. They'll walk around Samaria because they think we're unclean. Mm. Yeah. And you spent your money doing what? Now, I know this is a parable. It's not a true story, but I like to play out
There's
the story.
Details
after
around
the parable.
It. Yeah. Mm-hmm,
this guy took a risk.
Mm-hmm.
He, big time. A risk of his reputation.
Yep. For sure.
Think about the people that we've written off in our lives, the people that you don't think can be helped, the people that there's not one human being on the planet today that does not have Imago Dei, does not have the image of God, does not have the imprint of God on their lives, and this is what I'm wrestling with. This is what I'm contending, is for the church to get back to a place where we see the image of God, where we see the imprint of the Holy Spirit, and where we're willing to get messy and get involved. Mm-hmm. In the lives of people who maybe everyone else has written off.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Brady, you talk a lot to pastors. This is the Essential Church podcast. So there's pastors and leaders in God's church listening. And I heard once that a great sermon comforts the afflicted and afflicts the comfortable. So how do you talk to pastors about teaching about money when, you know, there's so much noise out there, so much clutter, so much abuse out there? Mm-hmm. How does a pastor sensibly stand in the pulpit like your pastors growing up and talk to the congregation about money?
Well, there's two topics that pastors don't want to tackle, and it's the two topics that are wrecking most of our families. It's sex and money.
Sex and money, yep.
So we get red-faced when we talk about either subject, and maybe we should, but I do think that there's a sensible biblical way to teach about money that we've got to rediscover in the pulpit. Mm-hmm. So I didn't write this book hoping that people would give more to the church.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I didn't write this book hoping that people would give more to me. Mm-hmm. What I want is for people to catch the spirit of generosity because it has the power to radically change people's hearts and lives. Mm-hmm. And money is wrecking people right now. I mean, if you look at the reasons for divorce, actually, financial pressure is one of the biggest reasons for marriages separating right now and for divorce happening, because couples don't know how to handle their money. They don't know how to talk about it, and they fight about it. They fuss about it. And so they're fussing about it all the way to church. They come into our congregations, and we're not talking about the very thing that's wrecking their lives.
Yeah, right.
And so I think we have to take responsibility. And the Bible is
full of it.
I'm gonna preach on the parable of the Good Samaritan. I'm gonna go to the Torah and preach out of Genesis. I'm gonna go to Psalms and preach out of Psalms about money. And then I'm gonna go to the epistles that Paul wrote and talk about another topic on money.
Can't scale.
From the beginning to end.
It's everywhere.
The Bible is full of teachings on money. So why are we ignoring this?
Yes.
Why are we not talking about this? Mm-hmm. I mean, even in Jesus' day, it was a big subject. It was a big topic.
Well, I want you to talk for a second about, it would seem as though living a life of dangerous generosity would actually increase the financial pressure on a family. So if financial pressure is wrecking families, dangerous generosity, I can't do that. I need to actually keep it. But I think what you're contending for in the book is that the more open-handed we are, the more safe we actually are with God. Can you talk about that for a second, what you've experienced on that front?
Yeah. I think the moment in Pam and I's life when we realized that we didn't own it, that it was God's provision, that's when our marriage changed.
Yeah.
Is when we realized, and at the time, I mean, we were in our 20s. We got married very young. I was 22, Pam was 21. And so we were in our mid-20s, and we had credit card debt. We were spending more than we made, and we weren't making that much. And We were nervous and afraid and scared. And I remember the first time the Lord really helped wrestle that out of my heart is when I realized if we would just trust, it was a matter of trust.
Yes.
Mm. Who am I trusting? Am I trusting my own strength to earn? Or am I trusting that God is going to give me favor and show me how he's going to lead me? And it was really me just letting the Lord start leading us.
Yeah.
And it took us a couple of years to get rid of all of our credit card debt, and we had no savings at the time. So we just made a commitment. First thing we're going to do is get out of credit card debt.
Yep.
And the second thing we're going to do is start living below our means and start saving. And when we really got those principles deep in our heart, I just remember we stopped fighting. Our marriage got better.
Yeah.
Our language got better.
Yeah.
Because we weren't led by fear.
Yeah.
Fear is a terrible place to live. Fear is a terrible master.
Yes.
And so I had a fear of being poor. Quite honestly, I grew up and I'd made a vow in my life that I was never going to be poor. And I just wasn't going to be poor. I don't know if any of you have ever really been poor, like no food in the house kind of poor, but I've experienced that. And as a young man, it marked me, and it scarred me.
Yeah.
And so I had to realize, well, who's going to make sure that I'm not poor? Yeah. Poverty in its sense, being poor is not a problem. Poverty is a problem, though.
Yeah.
So if you find yourself poor, the Lord can bless are the poor in spirit. Bless the
sure.
So it's not a problem being poor, but poverty is a awful master. Poverty can do things in people's hearts that's awful. I mean, it just wrecks people's lives and wrecks their imagination. It causes them to lose hope and stop dreaming. And I just never wanted to go back to that place. Mm-hmm. So I made some ugly vows in my heart that I had to wrestle with. I had to get clean from that.
Yeah.
And it was a liberating time in my life.
Inadvertently, you made Brady the Lord of your life, even though you were a Christian at the time.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. And I was smart, and I was ambitious. I was hardworking, and I thought, I can just muscle my way out of this. I can just do this on my own. And it didn't work.
Yeah.
Jesus said, freely you receive, freely you give. And I think for people out there who are listening to this, there are seasons where it's okay to be on the receiving end of someone else's generosity.
Absolutely.
If you find yourself as the person in the ditch.
Well, I have a friend that he and I usually take a road trip every summer. He's a really close friend. And for years and years and years on these road trips, we would stop, and he likes to drive, so I would just sit in the passenger side. And so we'd stop to get gas, and he would never let me buy him gas. Mm. He said, no, I'm buying the gas. I said, listen, we're on the road trip together. Mm-hmm. Let me buy a tank of gas. And finally, after two or three stops and after two or three years of this, I looked at him and I said, you're never going to catch the spirit of generosity until you learn to receive.
There you go.
Mm.
I said, you're never going to catch the joy of giving until you learn to let me buy you a tank of gas.
Great.
He got teary-eyed about it. In fact, he and I talk about that from time to time. He goes, Brady, that was a pivotal moment in my life. I will not let you buy something for me.
Yeah.
I said, yes, you are. I said, because I'm missing out on the joy of giving.
Yes.
You're robbing me of a joyful opportunity, and you're robbing yourself of the joy of receiving.
That's the whole thing. We love because he first loved us.
Yes.
We are generous because God was first generous. Somebody was generous to us. So it came into us, and then it goes out of us.
Makes me think of image bearing. Like we are able to reflect who God has been to us, but that starts with us receiving, us opening our hands, and then we start to live that out.
One it's of the amazing. Great stories that I love to tell, and it's in this book, is a story, I'm going to change her name for her safety's sake, but it's a story of a young woman who ended up at our Mary's Home. Mary's Home is an apartment complex that we have here where homeless single moms and their children come and live, and it's very restorative, and it's reparative, it's beautiful ministry that happens at our dream centers. But one of my favorite stories is the story of Jenny, and she was literally being held captive by her boyfriend and in a home, and she was living in the northwest part of our country, and every day he would go off to work and lock her in a closet, and she was pregnant at the time. So she came to the realization that if she had this baby, that this baby could very well be harmed by this guy, and he was the father of the child. So somehow she tells a story of getting a baseboard loose from the closet and wedging her way out of the door, breaking out of this apartment complex that she was being held prisoner in. And she goes outside. She finds a set of car keys that belong to this guy. With the clothes on her back and a few dollars in her pocket, she gets out in the car and she says, this is what she says, God told her to come to Colorado Springs. Mm-hmm. So she's hundreds of miles away, pregnant, alone, with very little money. And so she starts driving toward Colorado Springs. And she said oftentimes she would pull into a gas station. Her car was completely empty. She had no food. And she would just park her car and wait. And she said many, many times someone would come to her car or come to her and say, "Can I help you, honey?" Because she was obviously pregnant at the time. Mm. People had compassion on
sure.
her.
Mm.
And filled her car. She said three or four different times people, like good angels, you know, these angelic beings.
Good Samaritan.
Yeah.
Good Samaritan.
Yeah, right.
Would come and fill her car up, buy her a sandwich, and get her on her way. She stopped at a couple of churches along the way, and these churches gave her an extra set of clothes. Gave her gas cards. So she found help all along the way. And she ends up in Colorado Springs, and she's living. The only thing she could afford was a storage unit. So she would open up the storage unit, pull her car into the storage unit, pull the door down and sleep there at night. And go dumpster diving during the day to find stuff. Well, she found out she had a knack for restoring furniture. So she would find these old pieces of furniture in these dumpsters, restore it, she went to the local public library and got on Craigslist and started selling this restored furniture and made enough money to survive. When it comes time now for her to have the baby, and she realizes that she's going to have to go to an emergency room, and they're going to ask her about an address, a job, and she's going to have to tell them she's homeless. Mm-hmm. And so she's just devastated that she thinks she's going to lose her baby. So she ends up in an emergency room here in our city, and she's sobbing, she's crying, she's in labor, she's in pain, she's alone. One of the attending nurses in the ER knew about Mary's home and told her, "I think I can find a place for you and your baby to live." So she calls, and sure enough, we had one opening at the time. So she has the baby. In fact, I remember the board meeting where we had to decide, will we allow newborn babies into Mary's home? Because it's a different program when you have newborns. So we said, yes, we'll accept moms with newborns. And she was the first one. So she ends up in Mary's home for a year and a half. Her life completely is restored now. She took that furniture remodeling business, and last year, this is what she said. She came to our graduation and spoke. She said, "Last year I made $60,000. She says, "I have my own home. I am not on any government assistance." But my story started with people being extravagantly generous along the way, and her life was completely changed because of people being.
Thanks be to God. I've heard that story dozens of times now. It hits me every single time in a fresh way. And when I was reading through your book, what hit me about it this time was that there's no single person that is the hero of that story. And sometimes we want to make ourselves the hero of a generosity story. So we go, okay, I've got to do something extravagant that rescues somebody. But it was so many people along the way. So maybe the hero of the Good Samaritan story really is Jesus. And it's our participation in his life, our doing our duty when God sends those interruptions to us along the way that allow us to be the hands and feet of Jesus. It's not some heroic effort. It's just us being attentive in the moment, which is what you talk about, the interruptibility.
Exactly. I hope everybody reads the book. I hope it changes you the way it changed me to write it. I'm very proud of it. I think it's a message we all need to hear again.